Welcome to Coaching Session 14. True confession. Some years ago, I was tempted to attend, perhaps join regularly, an improv meetup. It's one of those you'd better do it now kind of things, but I didn't. And the moment passed. Now, I wasn't interested in being a comedian. I was interested in it from a public speaking and from a communication perspective. I mean, who knows? Maybe one of these days. At the time, I remember reading about how improv skills focus on a yes and instead of what most people do and say, no, but. And that struck me, and frankly, it stuck with me. The whole improv process hinges on one actor saying something in response to a prior comment. And the objective is to keep the dialogue going as long as possible. Yes and is a phrase that keeps it going. No, but slows it down or brings it to a complete stop. Suddenly, it just seemed everywhere I turned, I could hear people say, no, but. I mean, it's like when you buy a new car, and only then do you notice how many other people are driving a car identical to yours, same color, same make, same everything. I was aware of these phrases now, and I could hear them everywhere I went. Scarcity versus abundance. I'm aware of this whole abundance versus scarcity argument. Lots of folks who make their living exclusively online, they preach the gospel of abundance because it sells, and it has big appeal in social media. It's ironic to me that these same people will also use scarcity in their marketing, though. Buy my stuff in the next 12 hours and beat the price increase, or I'm only selling 200 at this price. Scarcity is what drives many people. Arguably, I would say most people. We compete and we battle each other because of it, and it's that emotion of jealousy and not feeling good for somebody because, well, they got something that we want. We would have rather had it. And it's that drive to best the other guy, and it compels us to hit the buy button when we really want something and we think we might miss out. You know, I'm not too sure about it all myself, but after all, most everything is scarce. I mean, when we're talking about business and customers, there's not an endless supply necessarily. And I never bought into that notion that when competition came to town, it would be good for everybody. And then there's that famous saying, all boats rise with the tide. Well, I personally know that some boats hit rocks no matter what the tide's doing. Abundance is the belief that there are no limits. There's no limitations. Admittedly, the abundance mindset is more attractive than scarcity. I mean, we all enjoy thinking that anything is possible and that everything is available to everybody. Honestly, I'm stuck somewhere in between scarcity and abundance. I'm not hardcore one way or the other, even though I would consider myself extremely competitive. I don't think everything is possible, and I don't think anybody can be anything they want to be. Okay, so sue me. I just don't buy it. I agree with Dirty Harry, who said, a man's got to know his limitations. The truth is, we all have limitations. I know I do. Hey, but this isn't about me. It's about you. And I'm going to ask you to embrace the notion of more abundance, but I want to focus that abundant thinking in a specific area of your life, and that is making professional improvements that can impact your career and your personal life. I call it possibility thinking. And so I'm asking you to consider what's possible. I'm asking you to say yes and instead of no, but. Today, it's about getting what you want. And maybe more importantly, to get what you need for improvement. It's not about being anything you want to be, but it is about being the best version of you that you can be. And I think that's a tall order enough myself without us chasing some fanciful, fictitious ideal that will never happen. So once again, I want to provoke thought because I know your actions are going to be driven by what you think about and how you think. So today's session is no different from any of the past. You may think it's odd to be diving into this kind of subject just now, but I'll tell you why I waited until now, session 14, to hit you with this, because by now we've spent some time together. We're a few months into the process, and topics like this demand a little bit of a deeper connection, I think, a connection that takes a bit of time. These aren't ideally the first topics worth diving into early on. Have you ever said to yourself, or you ever heard somebody else say, "I'm so miserable, dot, dot, dot"? I mean, do you say that? Maybe only to yourself. Sadly, some people live their lives miserable. Now, it's one thing to be unhappy every now and again, but misery? I mean, well, that's a depth of unhappiness I wouldn't wish on anybody, and I especially don't wish that on you. That improv stuff is relevant because at the heart of misery, the misery that I encounter, is the phrase, "no, but." I mean, too many leaders can't see past the current problems, the current situation, to improved solutions. You need to see past the present distress, however heavy or however light it may be. There's light at the end of the tunnel of almost every business or organizational problem. And part of my work is to concentrate on that light and direct you toward it. Okay, insert your favorite go to the light joke right here. The truth is, if you're constantly miserable, something's wrong. I mean, something's wrong. And it could be one thing, or it could be a combination of a number of things. Let me throw a few things at you. You're doing the wrong thing. Well, that's going to make anybody miserable. You're doing it in the wrong place. Yeah, that'll make you miserable as well. You're doing it at the wrong time. You're doing it with or for the wrong people. You're doing it with or for people who expect the wrong thing. Now, these can all be tough things, especially for leaders, because leaders have experienced success. I mean, come on, that's why they're leaders. And success can ruin people. It can ruin people who are stuck in a place they'd rather not be. It can ruin people who are feeling more important than all the rest of us. I mean, success can be a rut just as easily as failure. How can a leader be stuck in success? Hey, it's easy, and you might be feeling it yourself. It happens when a leader is stuck doing work they hate for people they don't enjoy. But the money's too good, or the prestige is too high. You know, nothing enslaves us quite like success. Consider a fictional story. It's a story that really is a composite of some situations that I've encountered through the years. The CEO has a $15 million a year business. His personal income has not been south of $1.5 million in more than a decade. He drives the latest 7 Series BMW, never hangs onto a car more than a year. He does have an imported AMG that he's kept for years, but all the other cars, they come and go. And yeah, there are a couple of Harleys in his 4-car garage. And so by all outward appearances, he is in hog heaven. Yeah, Harley pun intended. He hates his business. Well, he hates his employees. He's constantly frustrated by people who let him down. Nothing ever suits him. Nothing ever goes according to his plan. He micromanages everything. And I mean everything. He second guesses everything and everybody. Nobody does anything right. Nobody does anything good enough. His ego has told him that he's all that and them some because, come on, look at it. The business has experienced wild growth since he started it. And that's all him. He did this. He never credits anybody with contributing anything to his enterprise, and he can't figure out why he's so miserable. Because if only people would live up to his expectations, his world would be, it would be great. It would be vastly improved. Problem is, it's just never happened. And you know what? He is confident that it never will. And he's right. It won't. Because his expectations are grossly out of whack. His self-worth is grossly inflated. He is an autocrat. And he is the center of the universe, where he is the king, and, well, all the rest of us, we're just servants. This is his show. This is his parade. We're just spectators. And we're spectators who, more often than not, we disappoint him. He's doing the wrong things. He's expecting the wrong things. And he's miserable even though he's rich. The financial rewards don't outweigh his need to have everything in his life exactly how he expects it, when he expects it. But success has him trapped. Well, in his hard head, that has him stuck, refusing to change. So the money keeps on rolling, along with his frustrations and along with his misery. And as Dr. Phil would say, it's working for him. I mean, at some level, it's working for him, or he'd change. I suspect if his income took a hit, he'd be more open to change. But until then, it's not likely. How do you get out of your own way? How can you become a convert to yes and leave no but in the dust? Well, it starts in your head. It starts with how you think and what you think. And so I want to end this by giving you a few quick things to dwell on and to consider as you make up your own mind about how all this applies to you. Number one, no but is the voice of the contrarian. You know, leaders are prone to disagree with others because, well, because of their authority and their leadership position. Again, success spoils people. Don't fall into the trap of believing that you're the smartest person in every room you enter. Because I'll tell you, if that's the case, you're walking into way too many stupid rooms. You need to find some smarter rooms to go into. Number two, yes and is the voice of a person open to accept new information, new ideas, and embrace growth. So leaders who can incorporate this more and more into their thinking can find new levels of personal and professional accomplishment, and they can also enjoy a much higher level of fulfillment and contentment. Number three, it's not just about making more money or fill in the blank for whatever is your organization's goal. The mission has to be bigger. As the leader, you can't rally the troops around making you more money or making your company more money. My fictional owner, for instance, he couldn't get the troops excited about helping him buy a new 7 Series BMW every year while they continue to drive their 6-year-old cars that are falling apart. You need a bigger mission. What's yours? Number four, what makes a sustainable business or organization? A big part of my work in for-profit businesses is to help build a business that is sustainable and highly relevant. That means they've got to be profitable and they have to be important to the market. But you know, that's true of every organization, whether it's a for-profit or not. You've got to be able to continue to get the resources you need, and you got to maintain viability and be vital to the people you serve. And if you lose either one of those, well, you're out of business. If you lose your resources, you're done. If you lose your relevance, if the market, the people that you serve, if they don't see you as vital any longer, you're out of business. You need three ingredients to be and to remain sustainable and highly relevant. You need values. You need culture. And you need mission. Values are your principles and core beliefs. Culture, well, that's how you manifest those. Mission answers the biggest question of them all. Why? Number five, force yourself. None of us want to be forced into things we don't want to do, but you know, sometimes what's best for us is the very thing that we resist. When my children were small, well, they didn't enjoy going to the doctor. They certainly didn't enjoy distasteful medicine, and they absolutely didn't enjoy shots, but sometimes they needed it. As adults, we can impose our will on our small children, and we can do what's best for them. Okay, well, now that we're adults, who can force you to do anything? Well, the police, the IRS, the courts. You know, we don't typically associate the word nice with those things and those groups, but there's a force that's important to your growth, and it's the force that you impose on yourself. If you want to improve, you've got to force yourself to think in new ways, and you have to force yourself to do things differently. Force yourself to be open to the possibility that things don't have to remain as they always have. Force yourself to embrace the notion that misery does not have to be your lot in life. Number six, say yes and when it comes to those impulses you have to do things that historically have been uncomfortable. Let me give you what I think is a good illustration because it speaks to something that I've already talked to you about. Celebrating wins and bragging on people. For some reason, that is a universally difficult thing for too many leaders. And I constantly hear leaders confess that, you know, it crossed my mind to do it, but I didn't. You know, they let the moment pass without acting on it. Okay, apply that now to the things in your life that you would do, but you talk yourself out of it, or the moment passes, or you just delay it long enough so that the moment passes. I remember being a young teenage guy sitting around with my buddies at home, and we're sitting there and we're thinking, and it's the evening and we're bored and we're thinking, hey, let's call so-and-so. I mean, insert the name of the prettiest girl you could think about. And of course, it didn't, as teenage boys, it didn't take us long to talk ourselves out of it. I mean, what if we would actually make that call? Well, I remember one evening, my best friend and I were sitting in my room and we've been listening to music and whatnot. And we had that same conversation about making this phone call. And I made the call. And you know what? The call went fine. The call went great, much to the chagrin of my buddy who sat there in my bedroom, completely astonished that I had actually worked up the nerve to dial the number. Don't ignore those moments. Don't ignore those impulses that you have to do what you want to do what you know is the good and right thing to do. Don't let fear paralyze you, and certainly don't let the moment pass. Okay, so what's the conclusion of all this? By now, you may have encountered the wall. The wall is that place that we all hit when we come face to face with some hard truths. And by now, session 14, you may not have hit it, but you may have hit it, and maybe you've hit it a number of times. We've all been there. And we either react by shutting down, refusing to accept what we're faced with, or we embrace it, even if we're unhappy about it. And even if we need a little bit more time to distill it until we can find a way to take advantage of it somehow. Either way, we make a choice. Now, the leaders who excel find a way to push past their personal reservations or their long-held delusions, and they go ahead into this new territory to just see if they can find new levels of performance. It's called growth and improvement. It's called adapting. And you know what? Only the extraordinary leaders are able to face change by making changes in their own lives so they can be better suited for the present and the future. You don't want to be a one-trick pony. You don't want to be a leader who can only lead one way. You don't want to be a person who is stuck in the past, however successful that has been, or stuck in the past because there's been failure there. I want you to be extraordinary. I want you to be remarkable. And all I'm asking is that you consider what's possible. We'll talk soon.